There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my
And we're back. Sean Sullivan's away. This is Cam Marston sitting in for Sean. I host a show on 106.5 called What's Working with Cam Marston. We'll have a show on this evening featuring a gentleman out of Tuscaloosa named Paul Reed. Paul actually studies accents, and he and I get into what your accent says about you and how it can influence positively or negatively your approach to business and your client interactions and what they think about you. It'll be on at 7 and again broadcast a couple times this weekend. Incidentally, What's Working is now broadcast in 20 different markets across the nation. The show is growing rapidly, and I owe all of it to 106.5, who got me started. On the line right now, Brad Davidson. Brad and I met at a conference this past summer in South Georgia. It was a spring, maybe. Anyway, he's calling in from Orange County, California. He's a strength and performance coach, and Brad, I'm eager to get you on the line, but before I do, or get you on the show, before I do, I want to list what I got from your website this morning. Some of your clients: Brendan Steele, golfer on the LIV Tour, Carson Wentz with the Eagles, James Conner with the Steelers, Latavius Murray with the Vikings, Mitch Trubisky with the Bears, Joan London, the TV personality, and the one that caught my eye the most, which is I was taken back by, Natalie Pack. Most of you won't know her name. She's the former Miss California. Brad, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to Midday Mobile.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ken. Excited to be talking with you.
I really was taken by your presentation this past spring. It really captured me. And as a guy that tries to exercise and stay in shape, and as we're moving into the holiday season and there's a suite within reach anywhere I go, talk to me a little bit about, let's get into how to proceed through the holidays, but talk to me a little bit about your background and how you developed this expertise and your philosophy around training the clients that you train.
Yeah, I mean, I've been obsessed with exercise since I was a kid. It was the one thing that I just could never get enough of, could never learn enough of. I'd always catch myself studying it, researching it, trying it. So it's kind of been there my whole life. I remember that first time my dad took me to the gym when I was a little kid. I was done. I just couldn't wait to be old enough to get in there and train with them. And so it kind of all started there. And then, when I was 20, 21, I remember I told my dad I was moving to California from my little hometown in Oregon. I had $1,200 in my bank and got in my Jeep and drove to Southern California to make it happen. And so over the years, I always tried things on myself first. I'd find these new theories, these new ideas, and I would test them. And then what I discovered was there are some great mentors out there that were you could internship with. And so I just found those men and women and did whatever it took to be able to go study under them and learn from them. And then I would test it on myself. And over time, it just led me to a point where my stuff really stood out. It wasn't just the typical stuff being taught in college or the basic personal training certifications. And because of where I was located, I was exposed to extreme high performers. And as I get my hands on one, start changing them, start improving their performance, it would lead to another. And before you know it, years later, I'm working with all these extreme high performers in all areas: sport, business, special forces. It's just been a great experience. And I mean, my world is very focused on performance. So I use fitness, nutrition, all that to drive performance. I'm not the guy you'd come see if you want to do a bodybuilding show or a fitness modeling show. Like that world to me is a very different world.
So your clients are people who are To say they're goal-driven would be obvious, but it's they're looking for lifestyle behaviors here, not an event-focused behavior. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%. They're looking for ways to push the limit on their ability to perform, the ability to show up in life. And this doesn't have to be CEOs or entrepreneurs. A lot of times as parents just want to have more energy, be more engaged with their kids, be more present with their kids, be able to go out and throw the football around or shoot hoops or play pickleball. It's people that want to live their best life.
So social media these days is full of people who have the newest answer to the biggest fitness challenge. And it's a supplement. It's a new diet. It's a new type of lifting. It's a new way to shape your routine when it comes to exercise and physical fitness. It's just a trend-driven business that you're in. It seems just full of them. Yet what I recall about your presentation is these trends are really eye-catching, but what you need is a simple consistency. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, 100%. Everyone wants the new, exciting, shining object. No one wants to do the hard, boring stuff. But in reality, if you truly want a body that does you well for the long term, it is consistency. It is daily consistency of taking care of it. You can't do a 90-day transformation and expect a great outcome long-term. I always joke around with people. I'm like, okay, yeah, I see the before and afters everywhere. I said, ask to see the after-after picture, and you'll see the real damage that's been done. It's called the rebound effect. When you apply too much stress too aggressively for a quick change, as soon as it's done and everything, all those fads come to an end, you cannot sustain them long-term. There's the rebound effect, and it's everything that comes back as the body's now in protective mode to say, oh, my gosh, I got to be ready for you next time you do that to me. And it's not pretty. So consistency is the key. And here's what's funny is that there's really been no proven good strategy that's shown up that since like the 1940s. People are just refurbishing them, renaming them, setting the standards of, oh, this is the answer to everything. And my experience is most good strategies work for a period of time, but you have to routinely over time consistently progress them and change them. The body's an adaptive mechanism. It's going to adapt to whatever stressor you're putting on it, and then it'll stop working. So to think that there's one right answer, or one new fad diet, or one new way to work out, I've yet to find it, and I study all of them, and it drives me nuts now. Everyone's exposed and like, look how great I look. Here's the answer. And then you meet the people in person. It's like, you don't even look like your pictures on social media. Like, you're altering them, or holy cow, you can tell you're on a ton of drugs, but you're telling people, follow this new plan or follow this new diet and you'll look just like me. It's like, no, we won't. not unless we get on the chemistry project plan you're on.
Yeah. So one of the things that you mentioned is on your social media is these people that work out with a camera nearby so they can capture their newest physiology and post it real quick. But they're charlatans.
Yeah. I'm the old goat in the gym these days, and yeah, that's the big fad. There's cameras everywhere. These younger people are videotaping every exercise, posting it all up online. And what I honestly see is it's a need for attention. Mm. People are trying to get attention versus me coming up in the marketplace. It was who was the most educated, who had the best programming. It wasn't who could put the best pictures online or be the most influential with their videos online. It was who could provide the best results for the people they were working with. And that is really getting lost in the marketplace today.
Yeah. I remember a remarkable conversations that we had at that event in Georgia where you talked about, it wasn't a conversation, it was part of your presentation where you talked about stress and the significance of stress and what it does to your body. And people use the gym as a stress reliever. Well, there's more to it than that. And I want to talk about that when we come back from break, as well as what I heard on your podcast this morning, Brad, that absolutely took my breath away. So powerful. We'll be right back. I'm on with Brad Davidson. He's a strength and performance coach out of Orange County, California.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Sean is away this week. You're listening to Cam Marston. Sean, last we heard, is somewhere in the Blue Mountains of Jamaica going and studying deeply the Rastafarian culture. He'll be back in a week or so with stories to tell, I'm sure. I'm on the line with Brad Davidson. Brad is an author of The Stark Naked 21-Day Metabolic Reset. I heard a presentation from him this past spring. And Brad, prior to the break, we were talking a little bit about the impact stress has on the body. And I thought there were different types of stress, that I could have work-related stress, which is one type, and there was perhaps family-related stress, which is another. And what I think I remember you saying is stress is stress is stress is stress. And even, Cam, the workouts you're doing are causing stress. And you need to back off a little bit, pal. You didn't use those words, but that was my interpretation of it. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, I've come to learn that stress is the biggest enemy to metabolism, but no one's talking about it.
Yeah.
And you're right. Stress is stress is stress. Your body has one way to respond to stress. Now, when it comes to exercise, if you are recovering and handling your stress well, then exercise can become a use stress, which is a positive stress. But most of us are so stressed out in life, all the categories you're talking about, business, family, personal life, that you throw exercise on top of that, and now it becomes a distress and it causes problems. Now, why this is a problem in metabolism? A couple of reasons. One, stress leads to a catabolic state. Catabolic state means breakdown. You're actually breaking muscle tissue down to help survive the stress. That is a problem because muscle mass is the fountain of youth in the human body. It's the most metabolically active tissue, especially muscle that has been trained. So if we're in a state where we're breaking that down and we're losing that, we're losing the fountain of youth. It's also really harsh on the hormones, like the sex hormones, the anabolic hormones, things like testosterone, progesterone, these hormones that are really good for us, thyroid hormones, all these begin to get depleted over time when we're under too much stress. So what's happening is we're stressed out at home, we're stressed out at work, we're going to the gym and applying these high-stress workouts like HIIT training, high-intensity training. I've done a lot of studies on those. Yes, they burn the most calories. They're all focused on burning calories, and everyone thinks the more calories I burn, the better benefit I'm getting. But the problem is you see people do those types of classes, and it takes them 4 or 5 days to fully recover from them. If you're doing those multiple times a week, for most people, they're causing more damage than they are good. So in my world, it's all about trying to recover and become resilient to that stress we're under. At that point, the workouts you are doing become much more beneficial. So yes, less workouts. I still like to train hard. I love to lift weights a couple times a week, but I like to use longer, slower cardio. It doesn't burn as many calories, but it's really good for your body, and it helps control the stress. One of the most beneficial is simply walking. Walking is that one form of exercise that brings the stress hormones down and keeps you insulin sensitive. It's like if your focus is on weight loss, walking is like the greatest gift we have for that. But we've lost that in the name of effort. It's all about effort. The harder you go, the better it's going to be. I don't buy into that idea anymore.
Yeah, and I've backed off from it since your presentation, too. I was doing 5 workouts a week. I had to be really busting it to make it work. If my watch didn't read that I had burned at least 700 to 800 calories, I was angry at myself, and I'm walking twice a day. I am the mall walker at the gym. They call me the mall walker. The only thing I don't have on is a fanny pack and Velcro shoes, but I am the mall walker, and I do it 45 minutes a week, and it's helped a great deal. I can't thank you enough. It's helped a great deal. For the stress, for the sleep at night. Another thing you went into in Georgia was the sleep. Talk to me about sleep.
Yeah. That's the one thing we know for sure every human being needs. I think 17,000 studies now have confirmed that sleep is our greatest gift to the human body. We all need 7 hours or more a night of sleep. There's one genetic makeup. People can function well off of less than 7 hours of sleep, but you're more likely to have been struck by lightning to have that. Most of my CEO clients come and believe they have it. They're getting out of bed at 3, getting their workouts, and they're super driven, and I have to convince them, like, no, you don't have it. You need to sleep. So sleeping, if you want to live a long life, if you want to be as healthy as you possibly can, if you want to look as good as you can, you want your brain to work as best as possible, you want to be, you know, engaged and present and energetic with people you're with, you will sleep and put your emphasis on sleeping great as the number one most important factor to great health, to looking good, and to great performance.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a powerful message. And obviously, I think I saw on your social media, you've now given that message in 50 states, and very happy for you. Let's get into the subject matter of the podcast of yours that I heard this morning, in this extraordinary revelation that you had about yourself. First, tell people the name of the podcast if they want to listen to this thing, and then tell me, share if you would, a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the podcast is called The Brad Davidson Show. I decided to cut back on traveling so much and speaking so much. I was missing too many of my kids' events, and I wasn't able to be the father I wanted to be. So I decided to really cut back on my speaking and start this podcast to keep spreading my message. One of the first things I shared on it was, it is a tough topic for me, but
yeah.
From a state of, I got to share the truth, I had to share it. And it's this reality of, we all have demons, right? We've all gone through trauma. We've all been disappointed in life. We've all been hurt in life. And when I grew up going through these traumas, I went through some really aggressive ones over the last 6-7 years. It just devastated my life. I had no skill set in how to deal with them. Growing up in the gym, I always thought, if I get really physically resilient, I could work through anything. And all of a sudden, I was in a place where my life fell apart, and I had no skills to deal with it. I started realizing, as I started working through this idea of mental, emotional health, it's like, holy cow, so many of the things I was doing in my life were to avoid this deep, dark pit of area of things I didn't want to go face and deal with. You know, I was over-exercising to slow my mind down. I was, you know, drinking alcohol at night to try to calm down. I was drinking alcohol to help myself fit into environments to where I felt uncomfortable being, help me be a little more fun, those type of things. And it's very damaging. And my life finally hit a point where I had nothing I could do but face it. And I had to look in the mirror and I had to deal with my demons. I had to sift through them, feel them, experience them, not run from them, not hide from them. And by doing that, and I've been told for years that I needed to do that. I was honestly too afraid to do it. I thought therapy was for weak people. I thought all these horrible thoughts, these things that I had truly needed are the most powerful, beneficial things. I was running from like the plague out of fear. And after finally just for months sitting in them and dealing with them and stopping all the things I was using to numb and distract myself from them, it was the hardest thing I've ever done, but it was the most freeing thing I've ever done. And what's funny is the impact it's had on my health and my physical body and how I look. I didn't realize how much this internal stress of running from my fears was destroying my body, destroying my health, destroying the way I've shown up in the world. And I'm still in the middle of it. I'm 5 months in, like really facing it, of really removing all my distractions. But the peace that comes with that has been the greatest gift I've ever given myself. I'm about to turn 48, and for the first time in my life, I love how I look physically. I'm resilient in the gym. I'm strong in the gym. All the advice I'm giving people on working out, I'm doing, and it's just been amazing for myself as well. Like, you don't have to go abuse yourself with exercise. You know, it really works. And I'm ashamed to admit that I was using exercise to abuse myself and to distract myself. But I didn't have any other strategies in place when I was so afraid of my internal world. It's something I really try to push people to. Like, if you're struggling, if life's beating you up, you know, we all go through it. The greatest thing we can do is to face the demons.
Those demons, man, everybody's got them. And it's a tough, and I know I do. It's a tough conversation to have with yourself to admit those things. It's pain before resolution, and it's awful to look yourself in the mirror that way, but you know, and you've confirmed it, you know, on the other side of that conversation with yourself is going to be some freedom, is going to be some truth. Yeah. But getting to that point is really, really, really hard, and makes you vulnerable to yourself. You're ashamed of what you see.
Yeah, 100%.
But you've said that your physical fitness has benefited as a result from this. And it's amazing that by facing your weakness, you've become even more strong.
Yeah, it's amazing how much the tactics, the habits we use to numb and distract ourselves from that pain, how damaging they are. And how freeing it is when you just face it. And the peace and the reduction in just internal stressors will allow your body to heal and look better, perform better, feel better, all those things we're looking for just by simply dealing with that emotional turmoil.
Yeah, yeah. I love it, Brad, and I love that you've discovered this. Like I said, your presentation that I heard this past spring has stayed with me since then. I reached out to you as soon as I knew that I was going to be hosting the show because I wanted other people to hear just a snippet of it. If you would, the name of the podcast again real quick.
Yeah, it's the Brad Davidson Show.
The Brad Davidson Show, folks. Brad Davidson, Orange County, thank you so much, Brad. I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
This is Cam Marston sitting in for Sean Sullivan, who is today in Sarasota, Florida at the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Clown College, where he is going to leave his job at 106.5 and travel with the circus as a clown in the cars and the big shoes and the nose and stuff like that. You heard it here first. On the line with me is Jared Higginbotham. This is our final segment of Midday Mobile today. Jared and his brother Josh began Bayou Cora Farms not too long ago. They were in my studio in my office earlier today talking about this product, the story, which is what I want Jared to tell here in a moment. It's absolutely wonderful. Their broadcast will be in about 2 weeks on What's Working. And Jared, thank you for your time. Welcome to Midday Mobile, my man.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to talk to you again so quickly after having seen you this morning. The story that you told me, you and your brother Josh told me this morning, is absolutely wonderful about the lineage of your family, how they got to Baldwin County, this bag of corn. I'm not gonna give it away, and what it has become. Tell us that story.
Well, I'll give you the abridged version.
Yeah.
My wife tells me I tell very detailed stories, so I'll kind of shorten it up for the radio. But to get, from the beginning of the story of our farm and the corn to where we are now, it starts with my third great grandfather. He came from Marengo County, Alabama, to Baldwin County in 1875, and he settled in the Vernet Park community, which is southwest of Magnolia Springs along the Magnolia River or Weeks Bay area. And he brought with him an heirloom variety of multicolored corn. Prior to that, we don't know if he got it from someone in Marengo County or if his relatives brought it from Virginia. We're not quite sure where exactly it came from then. But he brought it down here to Baldwin County with him, and he started a farm, and he planted that corn most of his life up until he died in his 80s, and he was still picking the corn. And that corn they used for fodder, which is animal feed, but they also used it kind of like sweet corn during the milk stage, but that was just a short amount of time when it's growing. But most of it was dried and used for animal feed. So he grew that his whole life, passed down through the generations to where it got to my grandfather and his brothers, and they grew it most of their time farming. But in the 80s, when the ag industry got hit really hard nationwide, a lot of people had to leave the farm, find careers in other places. They slowed down on planting this corn. It wasn't one of their main commodities, but they wanted to slow down, try to focus on the things that they needed to, the soybeans, the conventional corn, that kind of stuff. So this corn kind of got put on the back burner. And one of my great uncles decided he was going to save about a gallon-sized bag of the corn in an old barn freezer. And actually sat there for 24 years until 2011. My grandfather was wondering if that seed was still good. So he took out 98 kernels and planted those 98, and 96 came up. So it still had great germination after sitting in the freezer all those years. So over the next 4 years, he built up his seed stock, increasing more and more. And in 2015, he planted 5 acres, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you have 5 acres of corn and you don't know exactly what you're going to do with it, that's a lot.
Right.
So he always had the idea that it might could be used for grinding into cornmeal and grits and such, but no one really ever pursued that avenue. But my brother and I decided, we're going to see where this goes. So we didn't even have a mill at that point. We had like a heavy-duty blender that my grandmother had, and we took the kernels, kind of pulverized them into cornmeal. I think I probably tore up her blender in that process. And we went to the local farmer's market, and we ended up selling out with just a couple hours of being at the farmer's market. So we knew then that we had something that people in this area were interested in and that they were looking for.
So 98 kernels of corn became a project at the farmer's market after putting it in your grandmother's blender on her countertop. I just love this story. And you sold out very quickly, and now you're planting. Let's bring them up to today. How many acres did these 96 kernels of corn that actually grew has now gone into, is now how many acres?
Well, from 2015 to now, we increased each year, and we're up to about 65, 70 acres now.
70 acres of corn that began from this bag of corn that was in the freezer at the back of the barn. I just love this. And you are selling this cornmeal. I bought a bunch of the grits earlier today from you guys because we sampled it, my wife and I did, and it will be Christmas presents. So it's turned into products. That tell them about the products that you are now making out of this corn and the significance of the GMO component of it.
Yeah, so right now we have four products. We have grits, cornmeal, and corn flour, and each of those is just a different grind size. We have a stone mill that we use to mill the corn, and it goes through the sifter, and each of those is a different grind size. And there's no added products to it. It's just 100% corn. And then the fourth product, we take the flour, and we add some spices to it to make a fish fry kind of mix.
Yeah, yeah. And so the GMO, this is stuff that I don't know about. Tell everybody, there's certainly someone out there like me that says, I've heard that reference before, but what does it mean?
It means it's non-modified corn. It's not made in a lab. It's not produced to have a higher sugar content or grow a certain height or anything like that. It's an old heirloom variety. It's open pollinated, which means we can save our seed from year to year to plant for the next year. Most of the heirloom varieties are pre-1950s, pre-1940s, before they started doing hybrid corn and stuff like that. So ours is pre-1900s. So it has a different flavor to it. We describe it as more of an earthy flavor. So it's different than the corn that you would see grown across the United States for all kind of different products.
So the GMO movement, there's a lot of people out there that are really concerned about these genetically modified products, and the corn is one of them. And there is a search by these people for non-GMO products. Most of the stuff, and here I'm talking about what I think I know, most of the stuff that you and I would buy at the typical grocery store is going to have some GMO components to it, and those that aren't are highlighted in the grocery store as non-GMO stuff. Theirs is non-GMO stuff. This Bayou Cora product is a non-GMO. And I didn't realize the fervent passion for people who are looking for non-GMO stuff. And I witnessed it this morning as Josh and Jared came into my office, and as they were coming down the hall, a guy that works two doors down from the hall from me said, "So you guys grow corn?" "Yeah, it's non-GMO corn." He did a dance in the hall saying, "I found it. I finally found this product that I've been looking for. We've not been able to find it." He got your business card. There's just a cult is too strong of a word, but there's a passionate group of people out there that are looking for non-GMO stuff. And Jared, one of the things that you taught me this morning is that in order to protect it, you cannot farm. This is not correct, but I'll ask you to correct me. In order to protect the product and the crop, you cannot farm next to it, or you can't grow a similar crop next to it. Elaborate on that for me.
Yeah, so we have to keep our corn separated from other corn. So we've worked with Auburn University and a couple other institutes that they say you really need to be about a mile away from other corn so we can keep the seed and variety integrity of our corn intact. And there's a lot of aspects of what the corn, most of the corn in the United States is grown for, fuel purposes, other products. And there are some aspects of GMO corn that are good, but what has happened over the last several decades is people are more concerned about the GMO products specifically for food intake or food purposes. And that's what our product offers to other people, that something that's not modified that they are going to use strictly for consumption.
Yeah, and you told me that you're almost at, well, you're at your limit. You're looking for more land in Baldwin County to continue to grow the corn. And anybody that lives around here knows that that land in Baldwin County is becoming harder and harder to find to try to, for you to try to spread your crops. If you could find an amount of land, how many more acres would you plant? Is that a fair question?
That is a fair question. We are always looking for more places, specifically because we can't just have one big field somewhere. You know, a lot of our fields are scattered around, like I said, trying to be a certain distance away from other corn. And we work with our neighbors and our distant family that still farms conventionally to try to work, to try to put our fields in different places that are strategic for us. But especially here in Baldwin County, it's hard, and we're losing so many acres of farmland that we can use to development. There's so many people moving in this area. So it is a challenge for us to try to make sure that we have enough space from year to year to have where we need to grow the corn, but also grow in our process.
What acreage would you take right now if you could get it?
For what we have on the horizons, probably 100 acres.
No kidding.
There's you know, a lot of farmers who grow conventionally, they need, you know, they'll grow several hundred acres, 1,000 acres. We're not to that point quite yet. That would be way more than we needed, but we do need to continue to grow in that aspect.
So I love this. We're going to come to break here momentarily. I'm watching the screen here, Leanna. It's that you went from 96 kernels to now needing 100 additional acres. When we come back, Jared, let's talk a little bit about where people can taste this product locally. I'm thinking specifically about Frankie Little and Roosters. There's a story there. Folks, you can tell I love this story. I love these stories. That's what's Working is all about. We'll be right back with Jared Higginbotham when we come back from break. You're listening to Midday Mobile. I'm Cam Marston, sitting in for Sean Sullivan.
Hey, this is Tony Truitt with Truitt Insurance and Bonding. When you need insurance help, use Truitt Insurance and Bonding.
Hey, and this is Brock Murphy. Make sure you listen to us on Truitt News Radio every Sunday at 8 a.m. right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Cam Marston sitting in for Sean Sullivan, who is at an undisclosed location, but he will come back changed, is all we know. Jared Higginbotham is on the line with me. He and his brother Josh run a company called Bayou Cora Farms. I interviewed them in my studio this morning to be a episode of What's Working with Cam Marston. I think it's in about 2 weeks that they'll broadcast. We got some inventory ahead of them. And we're talking a little bit, Jared, prior to the break, on where people can taste this product of yours and how that connected you with Roosters downtown in Frankie Little, another story of yours that I love. Go ahead with that one if you would.
Yeah, we love our restaurant partners, our chefs that we've been able to work with over the past several years. They really, you know, stepped out and taken a chance with our product. It's easy for, you know, a lot of restaurants to get just, you know, basic product. So it was great for them to take a chance on us. And locally, one of the first restaurants that really took a chance on us was the Noble South and Chris Rainasek. He would come to the farmer's market, and we really got to have a rapport with him. And he was one of the first ones to take our corn mill and use it on their menu. So he introduced us to other restaurants in the area. You can go to Hummingbird Way, that's in Mobile. And then with Roosters, Frankie would come to the farmer's market, and from the beginning when we first started going, he wanted our corn to be able to use to make his tortillas in his restaurant at Roosters. But you have to do a process of where you soak it in lime and transfer the corn so it makes it more palatable and able to use for tortillas. But we didn't have any kind of setup like that. So over the years, Frankie's been, you know, every once in a while he comes back and says, you know, can you do it? Are you ready to do tortillas? And recently we were put in touch with a local company that makes tortillas. And they actually had a way that they could do it without changing the process. They could just use our flour. So after about 5 years of coming to us, we finally got Frankie the tortillas that he wants.
So Roosters right now, if you go to Roosters downtown on Dolphin Street and you get anything with, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, but if you get anything that has a tortilla with it, you're going to get the Bayou Cora Farms heirloom, non-GMO corn as the basis for that tortilla. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so, yeah.
And you're also, these things are being sold in, not these things, let me correct this. Your products are being utilized in a number of restaurants I saw on your website in New Orleans. Coquette, for example, it's not far from where a friend of mine lives. When I go visit him, we walk past Coquette frequently. That they are using your products to, and they feature you on the menu. And I mean, is this something that you ever thought would happen? To me, it just seems it's like a Cinderella story. Is this something you ever thought would happen?
I guess maybe we had it in the back of our mind that, you know, if we could be on every restaurant everywhere, that would be great. But to get from where we started when we, you know, started going to farmers markets to as many restaurants as we are now here, all the way into Florida and into New Orleans. We actually have a restaurant in New York City as well. It's been amazing. We actually got in touch early on with a bakery over there, Bellegarde Bakery, and they had already had connections with a lot of restaurants, prominent restaurants in New Orleans. So they started buying our corn, the kernel, and they had a mill, a stone mill on their property, and they took our corn and milled it and did grits and cornmeal and flour as well. So they already had that structure in place to where they could make the connections with the restaurant. So after a couple of years of working with them, we have at least a dozen, you know, well-known restaurants that we sell to in New Orleans.
And you, the products are sold I picked mine up to play with in Publix. It's sold in a bag. Give me the pack size for that bag. Remind me how big that is.
Yeah, all the retail products that we sell are 1 pound bags.
1 pound bags. And my wife and I used it to make some grits. We used it the next day. I didn't tell you this morning when you were in my studio. We used it the next day. That grits, we used it the next day to make shrimp and grits. And it was good the next day. Held up very well. I love the stories like this. So the future is more distribution. The future is more restaurant partners. What else? What else is your future?
You know, that's definitely where we're headed. We want to be is accessible to people all across the country, and we're able to do that with our online sales. But we want to be in stores where people can get it their hands on pretty quickly. And we, like I said, we love our restaurant partners, so we want to continue to expand that avenue. We are also we've been working for the past couple of years with a couple of distilleries and trying to work with a couple of breweries to utilize our corn in their process as well, because the fact that it has such a unique flavor that can be used for the restaurant industry, that translate into the distillation and the brewery aspects as well. They're always searching for that unique flavor.
Wow, that's something that we didn't discuss, but it sure makes a lot of sense. That'll be interesting to see what happens. There's the guy over the bay that's doing the Judge Roy Bean Distillery. Are you familiar with him? We should put
We've heard of them.
We put you in connection with him. We're going to put him on What's Working in a couple of weeks, because they're doing some pretty, in a couple of months rather, they're doing some pretty creative things out there with his Judge Roy Bean spirits. I absolutely love it. So there's got to be some part of you, Jared, that is really proud that the family farm that was in dire straits in, what would you say, 1985, 1987, that was really struggling, is now back. And are your grandparents, is any of this original generation that took that corn out of the freezer still alive to see what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Our grandfather still works with us daily on the farm. He, you know, every day we're learning something new from him. So it was great to take what he had built over all those years and kind of transition it into a different aspect of the farm, a different market, a different way of doing things, but still utilizing all the knowledge that he had from the years and generations past.
Is he looking at you saying, I told you so, told you so. I saved those 98 kernels for a reason. I told you so.
He is, and I do believe in 2015 when he planted those 5 acres, our grandmother wasn't too happy with him because she knew that he didn't actually have an outlet for it, but we found a way.
Yeah. Suddenly you've got a bumper crop of something that you don't know what to do with, and then you went to your grandmother and said, hey, we need that blender.
Absolutely.
she loved that. So tell people where you can, where they can find your product right now. I know give them the website address, give them the retail outlets, et cetera.
Yeah, for our retail, they can look at BayouCoreFarms.com, and we ship nationwide. Locally, we are in Publix. They're kind of doing a transition from their local NCAP to more of a general supplier, so there might be a little bit of a lull now, but we'll get those back in there. They can look at Allegri Farm Market. It's well-known in Daphne. Lockley Farm Market, Farmhouse Market, and Foley are places where they can pick up the retail bags.
Sounds very good. And that, tell them quickly. This is a good story. I'm hopefully building up for the broadcast of the What's Working episode that you'll be a part of. But the hurricane came through at the same time that Southern Living posted about you.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to have a big feature in the fall edition 2020 of Southern Living, and that came out. We didn't know exactly when the article was coming out, but it was the same week, I think 3 days after Sally hit the area. So we did not have power for 2 weeks. We didn't know we were getting all these online orders. Finally, when we got everything back up and running, we were just bombarded and blown away with how many people from all over the country had read the article and were ordering. So that was the biggest boost we had up until that point, where it just took off. We weren't quite prepared, but we quickly realized we needed to be.
Yeah, that's funny. The lights came on, the modem came on, and suddenly you're looking at a screen and there are orders to be filled. And what a great way to recover from the hurricane. Jared, thank you so much for your time, my man. Good luck.
All right, thank you, Cam.
Yeah, folks, it's been a treat sitting in for Sean today. I come in, try to share a little bit about the world that I see and some of the What's Working guests and the ideas that we kind of generate on the show. And if Sean ever gets back, he's going to be full of tattoos, a new Rastafarian. And if he leaves again, I'll do it again. Take care.